the Shell President welcomes you all for what is event, illicit sex abortion in Garden. We live in an unbelievably decadent age. My name is Vince, that's what I speak. I speak English, Aboriginal, become commonly accepted, and stand on everyday affairs. We are engaged in massive slaughter of our own unborn children, as if there is these murders, crime, was no more significant than blowing on your roses and throwing away as a tissue paper. Is it a success that goes from its problem? What is paramount? Today we have the chance, the blessing to associate a great personality, His Grace Bhakti Chaitanya. He was born in 1951 in Auckland, New Zealand, in a preschool graphic family. He studied human psychology at university and worked as a journalist. He is the head of board of examiners at Brindavan's Institute of Higher Education, has delivered seminars throughout Europe, Russia, and is now gorgeous on our campus. So without any delay, let's be enlightened about this topic. Please, a big round of applause for this audience. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I hope you can hear me. Can you hear me at the back? We don't have a sound system. So, illicit sex, abortion and karma, it's quite a sort of stimulating sounding topic. And it's a very important topic. What is illicit sex? Abortion, of course, well, that's clear. Karma, what is karma? That also may not be so clear. And how are these things interwoven, how they connected up, how they relate with each other? How one thing leads to another. So, it's very important subjects. Very important subjects. First of all, what is illicit sex? Well, a simple definition. Very simple. You know, there can be intricacies also, but a very simple definition of illicit sex is sex not for producing children. You could say, pardon me for putting it this way, sort of like recreational sex, something like that. Just as a pastime for pleasure. So I'm speaking actually from a particular perspective. It's a broad perspective, but also a particular perspective from the perspective of the Vedic literatures of India. The majority, not all, but the majority of you from Indian backgrounds. So I assume you're familiar with this term, the Vedic literatures, the Vedas and related literatures. So that's a simple definition. To take it a step further, in one sense at least, a step further would be that outside of marriage, outside of some commitment, some substantial commitment to your partner, you know, we find that the animals, of course, they also reproduce, obviously, but they don't have marriage. You don't find it. Sometimes you find a different species, certain species of animals. Welcome. Welcome everyone. Try and sit as close as you can so I don't have to shout too much. You didn't hear that, did you? Devant. Avant. Okay. Okay. So I was saying, some animal species, they have, like, you could say, some process of bonding between male and female. They become connected and they stay connected. But otherwise, generally, amongst the animals, they just reproduce, and even sometimes with their own mother or, you know, sister or whatever, there's really a lack of discrimination or intelligence, say. But in the human species, we have this, there's the institution of marriage, and it's not just that people come together, a man and woman come together in a religious context and give some vows, like in the church or temple or mosque, but there's also a legal contract. You're all young, or most of you are young, so you haven't been through these things so much, but if you ever have the misfortune of having to go through a divorce, you'll find that other than being sort of taxing internally, it's very costly and complicated and difficult. So, but the idea is, the idea, not just religiously, but just in a social sense, the organization of society, it's good to keep the couples together as much as reasonably possible, because then it provides a stable framework for bringing up children. You know, what happens where you get a lot of divorce, or there's not even marriage, so people just go their own way after a while if they feel like it, and there is a child or some children, you get confused children. You know, children being brought up without a father, just by a mother, or even in some cases, not so much, but some cases, only by the father and not by a mother. Or sometimes it may be, you know, with the mother, and then they're different fathers, they change every now and then. You know, I'm afraid these things are going on. They're going on. And I know a couple of ladies, they're basically nice people. They have one child, is white, one child is white. I'm from, well, not from, but I'm based in South Africa, and there we used to have apartheid. So they have another, she has another child who is, they would say, colored, a mixture, and another child who's a different type of colored. So sure, It's difficult figuring it out. But they're actually brothers and sisters. But because of the inconsistency which is there in on the parental side, so there isn't a really solid parental factor there, that it's fluctuating. And so the children become unstable. In fact, well, in the Vedic literatures, in Bhagavad Gita, it's a bit of a long story, but Arjuna is speaking to Krishna about how, if the family tradition or family standards break down, then you get what in Sanskrit is called Varna Sankara, Basically, Varna Sankara means children who are just not properly brought up, not properly supervised, not properly trained and guided and cared for, and so they just become wild. No, they're the sort of people who, with all due respect, they become like punk rockers. Do you have punk rockers in Mauritius? Heavy metal. I don't want to say anything political, but kind of a little crazy, really. And they become social misfits. So, now of course, I'm not suggesting that if people end up with a partner and over a period of time, because it takes time to understand another person, it really takes time to understand another person, it takes time to understand yourself. And initially you may think a person is like this, but later you find out that they're more like that. Because sometimes people put on an act during the courting process that, you know, they're very nice, but it's more an act. I saw a cartoon once, not long ago, and it was an American cartoon. And in the cartoon, the son was asking the father, he said, "Dad, you know what I just read? That in India previously, sometimes the husband would not, or the bridegroom would not really meet his wife until the day of the wedding." And the American father said, "You know what, son? Here in America, it's the same." I don't know if you got that. In other words, in many cases, people put on fronts. People put on a front for a while, and once they get, you know, like particularly with a legal contract, a marriage contract, they get the other person, then they become more open about who they really are. So we're not suggesting, I'm not suggesting that if someone finds themselves in a situation where the person they thought was like this, but actually they're like that, I mean, particularly in a really drastic way, like violent and nasty and things like that, not suggesting that you should just stick with it just, you know, until they beat you to death. But at least, this is a very important and foundational principle, is that if people enter into a married relationship, basically they should, first of all, they should do the research beforehand to get a reasonable idea that it may work. And then afterwards, they should try their best to make it work, because there are ups and downs. You know, there are ups and downs. And when you're living with the same person, you know, like for 10 years, and you get to understand more what they like, and you see they have some faults, and there can be some difficulties in just staying with a person just indefinitely. So, don't worry. Some tolerance will have to be there. Some tolerance will have to be there. Even if you marry Prince Charming, or, you know, whoever, Princess Charming, it ain't so easy. And if you don't believe me, you know, ask someone who's been married for 20 years. I was recently in Finland. I get around. I was in Finland. There was a big debate, because in Finland, the divorce rate is plus or minus 75%. The average generally is about 50. So there, though, the divorce rate is particularly high, 75%. So they were debating in the parliament what to do, because the majority, 3 out of 4 marriages are ending in divorce. It's expensive, it takes time, and it's just a whole big thing. So they were debating in parliament, maybe we should change the divorce laws. When I arrived there. So, it was being reported every day in the newspapers. There were 2 or 3 main possibilities that were being presented in the parliament. One was a 1-year renewable contract. Understand me? 1 year. At the end of the year, you get together and you say, okay, what do you think? You want to sign up again, or shall we just, you know, say thanks but no thanks? What to do? So anyway, it was seriously suggested, I'm not actually joking. So they felt that was too short. So then someone suggested, what about a 10-year renewable contract? Same idea, but just after 10 years you sit down and, you know, what do you think? Shall we have another go? Or... But then they thought that was too long. So when I left, I stayed there just a few days. When I left, it appeared they were settling on a 5-year renewable contract. It had to be consciously renewed, not just automatic renewal. You had to actually sign up again. Otherwise, you just say goodbye and just part your ways, and it doesn't cost anything. So, I mean, there's a certain sort of pragmatic value or sense to it to some degree. But forgiving children, and for that matter, the partners themselves, giving stability, and maybe particularly for the children, so they can grow up feeling protected and cared for and secure like that. It's, it's not really so good. So illicit sex then. Sex outside of marriage, and even within marriage, just a sort of recreational type of activity. Because you know what happens to people who get into recreational eating? You know what I mean? People who get into recreational eating. Well, you know, with all due respect, because it's not natural to just, you know, just eat as a sort of like, as a pastime, as a hobby. People get fat. That's the first thing. They get fat. And when the body is fat, of course you're all young, you haven't been introduced yet to the wonders of high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease. Sure. You know, at my age, I used to be your age once, believe it or not. And I was also at university, well, you mentioned, but I was studying philosophy in Auckland University in New Zealand. I hate to say that I dropped out in 1972. So, yeah. So, you know, when you get to my age, you have to watch out. Cholesterol, gotta watch out. I carry with me, not on my pocket, I travel with a blood pressure machine.
just to keep an eye on it, and not because I'm some sort of, you know, unusual physique or something like that. But when you get to this age, I tell you frankly, everything becomes a bit delicate, and you've got to keep your eyes open. So, yeah, so if you eat too much, if you really get into it, then you get fat. And it becomes too much for the basic system of the body, and then you get disease. So sex, like, what is sex really there for? What is eating there for? You know, it doesn't mean that you must only eat nasty tasting things. You must only drink Corella juice. Did you ever try drinking Corella juice? That's pretty exciting. Or ginger juice. Try just, you know, juicing some ginger root. You get a real zing out of that. So, you know, eating in a responsible way doesn't mean that it's just going to be unpleasant and, you know, maybe just boiled potatoes or something like that. So, licit sex within marriage for the purpose of producing children doesn't mean that the experience is not going to be pleasurable. It is what it is. But the thing is, because we are humans and we have intelligence, or, you know, some intelligence, 50% of the population is of less than average intelligence. So we have some intelligence as humans. We should really see how to structure our lives in such ways that, you know, one, we live as naturally as reasonably possible. And this is applicable on the broadest scale you can imagine. You've all heard of global warming. So global warming on train. See the plane. Yeah. So you've all heard of global warming. I saw on CNN 4 or 5 days ago at the most. There was a report about how the Great Barrier Reef, Australia, how it's melting. And it's just, they said by 2050 it'll be non-existent. You'll still be alive then. I don't know about me. I'll be 99. If I make it. If it's worth making it, you know, to the time of 99. So yeah, the world will change because of global warming. It's already changed to some degree. And what does it mean? It means irresponsible living. People not living intelligently, living in unnatural ways. All this industrialization and so on. You know, it gets to a certain point and it becomes very unnatural. And it creates, there are many unfortunate side effects. Like, I also read on CNN, guess what I look at from time to time. I also read how there's a movement in America, I forget the name, but the basic idea is, don't buy any product which has been manufactured through slavery. Isn't it? Because it's a big thing nowadays. They just realized slavery was not abolished with Abraham Lincoln, you know, 100-something years ago. Slavery is alive and kicking. It is just, it's big time. And even for that matter in India. You know, you go to India, And I'm going to India on Thursday. I've been to India probably, well, I lost count, maybe 50, 60, 70 times. And there's so many children working. And, you know, really working under very unpleasant conditions. And they can't, you know, they're Hindi speakers, but they can't speak Hindi. It's just some sort of slang mishmash. And they can't read. So it's slavery, actually. And that's child slavery. And then there's adult slavery. There's something to think of. I'm sure some of us are sitting here today, again, with all due respect, we try to be very respectful. Some of you are sitting here wearing clothes which have been produced by slaves. I would assume it's very likely. Okay, so now the thing is, we have intelligence, and we should try to live intelligently. And, you know, first part, or one of the first parts, is to live in an actual natural way. You know, the classic idea of pushing a square peg into a round hole. You try and force it in. And you can sort of get it kind of in, but it's not natural. So we should try to live intelligently and structure our lives individually and, you know, collectively as much as we can, but at least individually. We should try to structure our lives intelligently so we live in ways which are natural and therefore naturally beneficial to us. And in that way, you know, somehow or other, we can also make a contribution to life in general. So part of that, living naturally and responsibly, would include no illicit sex. Getting married, not just hanging out with the boys or the girls, and etc., etc., and so on. But actually, finding a partner, and in a reasonable way, really trying to understand, could this person really be my partner or not? I mean, what are the odds? Well, if the rate of divorce is 50%, it's sort of, you know, in the balance. But try and live like that, with no illicit sex life. And then when the children come, try and look after them. Try and train them. Children are not just toys, you know, to play with and all that sort of stuff. Just, you know, amusement features in our lives. Children need to be trained. Otherwise they grow up, well, like we said, Bhagasankara. So then, when people are irresponsible, then just like if you eat too much, recreational eating, you know, you must get fat. It's just the way it goes. So when there's illicit sex, then you'll get unwanted pregnancies. And then, in many cases, you get abortion. You know what is the biggest killer of human beings in the world? The biggest killer? What do you think? Heart disease, or old age, or war, or, you know, what do you think? It's actually abortion. There are more people killed by abortion every year than were killed in the entire Second World War, you know, which was 5 or 6 years long. And, you know, they were really trying to kill people too. So, but there's more people killed every year through abortion than anything else. You know, next maybe, I don't know actually, cancer, maybe heart disease. So, one of my good friends in Australia, he told me a little while ago
on his 21st birthday, on the day, his maternal grandmother, his mother's mother, approached him and said, okay, you're 21, I want to tell you something. So she said that when your mother was pregnant with you, she wanted to have you aborted, but I convinced her not to. That person, friend of mine, he said, his, like, his perspective on his mother, his relationship with his mother, changed irreversibly from that moment. That he understood, my mother actually wanted to kill me. And, you know, if someone wants to kill you, what do you think about them? It's hard to, unless you're really, you know, a really benevolent type of person. it would, I think, be extremely difficult to be really loving and affectionate and all that, isn't it? But this is what happened to him. Yeah. So first thing is, it's not nice to kill people. Actually, it's not nice to abuse people in any way, but it's really not nice to kill people. And abortionists, pro-abortion people, they would say, or try to say, that when the child is in the womb, the child is not a real person. Like, we're real people, they would say. So, you know, if anyone tries to kill us or kills us, then that's really bad. Then, you know, then you go to jail for the rest of your life, or maybe you'll be executed, something like that. But they would like to say, they would like us to believe that before, you know, some point, whatever it may be, maybe before 6 months, in some countries they say 6 months, that you're not a real person, you're sort of like a subhuman, or, you know, less than a real person. So to kill you is not only not criminal, like practically the most criminal thing that a person can do, but actually it's good. You get paid for doing it. And, you know, this is what the pro-abortionists will try to say. We don't really agree. We don't agree with that. According to the Vedic literatures, from the time of conception, from the actual time of conception, the person is there. Just not so developed, obviously. But, you know, when the child is born, when the child is, say, 3 months old, a 3-month-old child, if you leave a 3-month-old child, just leave it and just tell the child, you look after yourself, and literally leave the child, that's it. And now it's up to the child, everything. Then, well, you're going to have a dead child, isn't it? No child will survive. No 3-month-old child will survive because they're just not competent. In fact, you know, it's only after some time that a child becomes sufficiently competent to feed themselves and so on. But, a dog, or any animal, really, a dog can look after itself, isn't it? A dog, any animal, they can look after themselves. So, what this means is that, in terms of just looking after oneself, keeping oneself alive, this means that a dog is more competent than a human being, up to some point at least. Up till some point, because the dog can live and feed itself and look after itself and things like this. But at a certain point, the human being develops and then gradually starts becoming more competent. So of course, you know, in human society, in common day human society, there's the practice of meat eating. There's another thing we don't really accept, that just because we are humans and we are more intelligent and more capable, therefore we can kill other living entities to eat and it's just fine. We don't accept that. Rather, we accept every living entity has the right to live. It is living, and it has the right to live. So, now, this is very interesting. This is the Philosophical Society. I'm going to give you a philosophical concept here for you to think about. The philosophical concept is impersonalism. Impersonalism. As a philosophical concept, impersonalism means that we are not persons, but we are things. We're not persons. We are things means we're just combinations of chemicals. You know, when I was at school, we were told our bodies are 70% water. H2O. Is it the same today? That was in New Zealand. Is it the same in Mauritius? Or are Mauritians more sort of fluid? So, in other words, these bodies can be analyzed chemically. I became involved in consciousness, Vedic philosophy in England about 40 years ago. And I read an article in the Times, the London Times, owned by Rupert Murdoch now. I read that the body had been analyzed chemically and all the different, you know, the calcium and the bones and whatever else. All these things have been measured out, and the article said you can buy the same chemicals in a sort of chemical shop for £10. Maybe the value has gone up. That was like 35 years ago. Maybe £40 now. So the Vedic concept is that we are not just things like this desk, the wall, the building. These are things. They're made of the same chemicals, same physical composition, but we are alive. We are conscious. We have vitality and dynamic energy, but the wall doesn't. So, we are persons. We are not things. Impersonalism, the basic assumption is there are no real persons, they're only things. So our body, we are just lumps of chemicals. We're just lumps of chemicals. And even spiritually, God is not a person. Maybe in some circles they say, God is light, God is energy, God is love. They say things like this. But it means God is not a person. You know, light is, there's plenty of light. Energy, just some force. Impersonalism. Now, if we adopt this point of impersonalism, then to kill a child within the womb is fine. For that matter, to kill you was fun. How would you like that if someone thought it was fun? Would you like that? Of course, we wouldn't think it's fine. And according to the Vedic literatures, we would say ultimately that is because we are actually persons. And we have personal existence. And we're not just chemicals, because, you know, chemicals don't have feelings and emotions like that. So impersonalism, the big politicians feel, you know, there was a person, I don't know if any of you are studying economics, Milton Keynes. You heard of Milton Keynes, the father of modern day capitalism. And he argued, his argument was that the economies are down. It was like 150 years ago, something like that, or more. What we need to get the economies going, we need a good war. Get people motivated. Have a good war. That'll get human society going again. But it means that he doesn't care about the people. Just kill some people. And, you know, the economy will be better. Something like that. It's impersonalism. So, the idea that the child within the womb is not a real person, so can be killed, it's also part of impersonalism. Racism, South Africa. Apartheid. Racism means impersonalism. There was a saying, a joke, in South Africa, but it was also not a joke. If you're white, you're all right. If you're brown, stick around. If you're black, step back. You just learned something about apartheid South African culture. So in other words, you know, don't worry about me being white. But the thing is that the idea was, if you're white, you're superior. And the way it was actually applied was, if you're Indian or colored, you're second class. You're not on the level of the white people. You're on a lower level. And if you're black, if you're African, then it's the third class, it's the lowest class. It's really, you know, pretty out of it. So that was law. That was law for years. But it's impersonalism. It's impersonal because we think certain people are less than us, just by definition. Existentially, certain people are less than us, and some other people are less than them. Or sexism. What do you think? That women are less than men. Good idea. We don't agree with that either. Women are less than men. So, you know, women, they only got the vote. On my mother's side, one of her predecessors was a suffragette. She fought for the vote for women. But yeah, you know, women do the same job, but should get less pay. This is sexism. But we say it's not just sexism, it's not just racism, it's impersonalism. That I am a higher type of person and you're a lower type of person. And the animals, they're really low. This is speciesism. According to the Vedic literatures, every living entity is an eternal person. It's just their different bodies, different brains with different capacities. And as a result, they function differently. Some can function more effectively, some less. But it's just because of the body and the development of the brain. That's all. It's not really actually showing your value as a person. Because like a child, we were all, including me, we were all incompetent children some time ago. But now here you are at university, and you're all very smart young people. So the potential was there, but when you were a child, it wasn't manifest. So even in the animals, the potential is there. But because of the physiology, because of the way they are, it never really develops as it does with the human beings. So impersonalism, abortion as impersonalism, when there's a child there, when there's a human being there, even though not developed, not competent, they shouldn't be killed. And then karma, our final point is karma. You know, karma to many people is like an esoteric type of idea, a little unworldly, that whatever you do, there are consequences, and specific consequences, very tailored to what you did. But you consider the laws of physics. Some of you may be studying physics, so you know physics. You exert, you take something, throw it in the air. You exert some energy, right? So you can then calculate how high it will go. Are you studying physics? No? You can calculate how high it will go, how long it will take to get there, then how long it will take to get down, what the impact will be when it gets down, where it will land. And all these things can be calculated. It's all very specific. It's not just that it just happens and just, you know, sort of abstract or non-specific. It's very specific. It's totally specific. But up until, you know, Newton or whoever it was, people didn't understand these particular things, but they're realities. So the Vedic literatures say also that our activities, not just if you throw a ball in the air, but everything we do, every single thing we do, down to every breath we take, has karmic consequences, has there are reactions. So if you kill, well, what would you expect as a reaction? If you kill, and what would you expect? Did you give you 50 rupees? If you kill, you know, if we're talking about a reaction which is really, you know, tailor-made and it really fits in with the action, then, you know, you might expect if you kill, you'll be killed. Something like that. One of my friends, many years ago, really, like in the 70s, was speaking with John Lennon. You heard of John Lennon? The Beatles. So, they're having a discussion about karma. And John Lennon, well, he, among many other things, he's famous for writing the song Imagine. I don't know, you know, it's an era prior to yours, but still it's very famous. You may have heard that song. And it's basically saying, you know, there's no karma, there's no nothing. You just do what you like and, you know, let's just live in peace or something like that. Wishful thinking, really. So anyway, John Lennon was saying, no, no karma. And my friend was saying, yes, there is karma. Whatever you do, there are natural reactions. It's just the laws of physics. It's actually just the laws of physics. Extended. That's what it is. And John Lennon, so it's going back and forth, and it became a little heated. And John Lennon eventually said, I'm going. They were sitting in an old British, coffee shop. A very old, gabled British house, which had exposed beams and things holding the place together. Over John Lennon's head was a beam holding the roof up. He had forgotten about the beam. John Lennon, had enough. He stood up and he hit the beam hard, really hard. And he just sat back down. He was shaken. The next day, he wrote the song, Instant Karma. In other words, it convinced him. And you look on Google, just Google Instant Karma, you'll find it's there. And one of the lines is, Instant Karma is going to get you. It's going to hit you over the head. You better get yourself together, because tomorrow you may be dead. So much for John Lennon, I think he is there. So karma. If we kill, it's not good. It's really not good. How can you say that we will create peace through violence? Doesn't make sense, does it? We will create peace through violence. We will create happiness through distress, using distress as a medium, because killing someone's pretty distressing for them. So through distress, we will create happiness. In terms of karma, action and reaction, activity and natural consequences, it doesn't make good sense, does it? Yeah. So therefore, the Vedic literatures say we shouldn't engage in illicit sex. But illicit sex can certainly be there in the context of responsible family life. Abortion should not be there. And rather, one should try to live in such a way that the natural consequences of what you do will be good. You'll create an auspicious future for yourself. I mean, it's sort of like here you are studying. And if instead of studying, I was at university, and I know what it's like. And some of my friends were in university, but they were only there because of the parties and the girls or the boys. And that's what they were there for. And the marijuana. Anyway, we won't talk about that. And even some other things beyond marijuana. And that's what they were there for. That's really what they were there for. And they all dropped out. They didn't get qualified. So in that sense, they didn't create futures for themselves. They couldn't get good jobs and so on like that. So if we live impiously, just in terms of the laws of physics, if we live impiously, we are creating a future for ourselves which will be like that. If we act inauspiciously, we'll create an inauspicious future, and then we won't be happy. So, let me just say in closing, normally I don't make presentations like this. If you look at me, you might possibly guess why. Normally it's more sort of, specifically spiritually focused. But these are just some thoughts on these subjects. Please do think about them. Particularly think about this idea of impersonalism. Impersonalism. Right up to the top, God is not a person. God is not a person. And we can't therefore have a personal relationship with Him. And therefore we are not persons. And therefore we don't need to deal with people as persons like this. And we don't need to look after nature. We can just abuse nature. Don't worry about it too much. This is all part of impersonalism. So, thank you all very much for listening. I must say you're a good audience. If we were in America, I go to America sometimes. If we were in America, you know, half of you would be asleep, and the other half who weren't asleep would, I don't know where you'd be. You'd probably be out by now. So you're a good audience. Thanks very much. I see, what's this? Oh. Some questions. 8 minutes. Look, we have a couple of questions. What is the sanction or punishment if one commits abortion? Anyway, we talked about that, I think. Now, just consider, how's this for an idea? Kentucky Fried Chicken. You have it here in Mauritius. You're becoming advanced. You've got Kentucky Fried Chicken. Well done. Colonel Saunders, right? I think he's already dead. But anyway, whoever owns Kentucky Fried Chicken, how many chickens have been killed? They probably have a record, but I imagine it's billions. Yeah. And I read a few years ago, the number of chickens killed in a year on planet Earth is greater than the number of human beings living on Earth. Yeah. Yeah, how's that? I can tell you a couple of other good ones too. So yeah, so Colonel Saunders, many chickens killed, and he is raking in the rupees at a good profit. So, according to the laws of Karuna, I mean, it's perhaps a little difficult to say, but a possibility. He could be born as a chicken and killed. That'd be pretty fair, wouldn't it? Wouldn't be unfair. But then, you know, there are billions of them. How about he takes birth for each one? Okay, you laugh. At least we've got some response out there. But you know, each chicken matters. Don't think that just because they're chickens, they don't matter. Each chicken matters. Ask themselves if they matter. Ask the chicken, do you matter? And you'll see the chicken matters. So, yeah, this is laws of karma. Well, here another good one. This is a really good one. You'll like this. We have a group of people who follow the Vedic philosophy in Hungary, in Europe. They are, well, there's some of them are engineers, some of them are like environmentalists, and, you know, they're scientific people, in other words, but they're all PhDs. They're all PhDs. So they're really, really sharp people. And they're authorities in their fields. So they did an evaluation of planet Earth and its capacities to produce the basic things we need, like how much petrol, how much oil is left, how much natural gas may be left, how much food can this planet produce. And then what they did, so they calculated every year how much this planet can produce. Then they calculated how much does every American consume specifically the Americans, because, you know, not that I or we are anti-American, some of my best friends are Americans. But America is the capital of planet Earth. Let's be real. I mean, in terms of, you know, industry and technology and the direction of life. And Mauritius, you know, in its Mauritian way, is sort of an extension of America, economically. It really is. So, all around the world, people, consumerism, people are following in the footsteps of the Americans. It is a philosophy. It is a political philosophy that you give people sense gratification and they will not revolt. Politically, they will not revolt. But they, you know, they'll just carry on living and not, it won't be political revolution. So they calculated how much the average American consumes. And then they calculated, if every human being on this planet consumes at the same rate as the average American, how much will be needed? And you know what the result they found out was? And these are really intelligent people. We will need 6 planets. We will need 6 planets if every human being on this planet consumes what the average American consumes per annum. We will need 6 planets to produce enough. Think about that one. How should sex life be after marriage? What is the importance of regulated sex life within marriage? Anyway, let us just say, without going into technical details, that sex life should be there for producing children. And how many children do you want? Well, you know, when you don't have any, you might say, yeah, go for it. When I was a child in New Zealand, our next door neighbors were Catholics. They had 15 children. Seriously. We would go and visit them sometimes. And on one side, 2 children were killing each other. On the other side, a couple of children were smashing something. On another side, a few more children were having World War III. Wow, it was madness. It was literally craziness. It was beyond the capacity of one man and one woman to manage. So what does that mean? Well, it means at some point you would stop. How's that? At some point you would stop. How would you stop? Because, you know, there's a natural enjoyment in it. How would you stop? Well, according to the Vedic literatures, you would stop by engaging in activities which give a higher pleasure, which is spiritual activity. You know, we were children, we all went to the beach and built sand castles, I suppose. But now when you drive past the beach, it's not that you get the urge, I must build a sand castle. But as a child, I'm sure, you know, you felt, I must build a sand castle or else. But as you grow up, you go beyond some things. So as you grow up, you can go beyond sex, and I mean in a nice way,
not just by becoming rigid and hard like that, but by developing your life positively, spiritually, and getting higher enjoyment. Just as now as young adults, you're getting higher enjoyments than little children with their little toys, their little toy motor car. Now you've got your real motor car. So it's better, isn't it? So, but you can also get higher pleasure spiritually. And then you can give up sex life, and it's not a big deal, like a big struggle. What about abortions in cases where the woman or child was raped or was the victim of incest? You know, I was going to say earlier, just for the sake of our general discussion, let us avoid what we call what-if questions. This is a what-about question. What-if question means, you know, some really sort of special situation, a really extraordinary situation. Like, what if, in regard to vegetarianism, what if you got washed up, you were in a shipwreck, you got washed up on a little island as big as this room, and what to eat? You ate all the grass, then you ate all the seaweed you were able to get. Now there's nothing else left to eat, there's only a dog. So, what if that's your situation? You know, frankly, for the purposes of a general discussion, I'd rather avoid going into like real specialized what if questions. I mean, not that they're not worthy of discussion, but, you know, and a possible answer would be, ask the child in the womb, what if? What do you think? How would that be as an approach? What if it was you, when you were in your mother's womb, you know, 20 odd years ago, whatever? What if it was you, and this is now your mother who just got raped, or something like that? What if it was you and we asked you, what would you say? Go ahead. I doubt it. Is sex life within marriage always illicit when practiced at a time when a child is not desired? Are there any circumstances, except for reproductive purposes, is practical and yet not known as illicit? You know, our definition we gave at the beginning, within marriage and for the purposes of having children, you know, that would stand, basically. That would stand, yeah. So there you go. Thank you all very much. All the best in your studies.